Happy Friday, everyone. Welcome to Drive2HR, the number one internet daily radio show for the HR professionals. And today, this is your host, Anisha, and my partner in crime, Valentin Cup, is not there today with us, but we have a wonderful, wonderful guest joining with us. Let's welcome her back again, Bianca McCann. Bianca, welcome to the show.
Hey, Anisha, so great to be here. I think it's been actually almost exactly a year since I was here last, so thanks for having me.
I know, right? Yeah, it's awesome to have you back again on Drive2HR. So if you don't mind, Bianca, a lot of things might have changed in your world, but then if there is anyone out there in our audience who doesn't know of you, we would appreciate if you can talk a little bit more about you and what you do.
Absolutely. So I do a bunch of different things right now, lots of fun multiple hats, but I work for, firstly, I work for SAP. It's a big technology company. You've probably heard of us. And I came over in the SuccessFactors acquisition back in 2012, so been with SAP SuccessFactors ever since. And I do sort of three key things right now for the company. The first thing I do is I head up talent and leadership for our sales and services organization. And so I oversee the talent business partner org that handles that stuff. I also am still an HR practitioner, so I support one of our key presidents as an HR, global HR leader. And then finally, what's really cool is I get to travel around mostly North America and spend time with our awesome HR buyers, HR customers, talking about success factors, how we implemented it internally, and really how to help them sort of push the needle as to where they want to go in their own HR strategies to push their own business agendas. So I do a lot of stuff. It's been totally fun.
I know, right? A lot of stuff that is going on in your world, and you are traveling across the world, being a global HR leader. What's keeping you up at night these days?
Well, I have to say, I mean, so there's so much going on in HR, but one thing that's really been top of mind for me lately, We actually partnered up with Oxford Economics, and if people aren't familiar with Oxford Economics, they're basically the guru of global forecasting on the planet, right? This is what they do. And so I'm super excited to share with you, Nisha, that we actually, SAP, partnered with Oxford Economics to really take a look at what's coming up in the world of work. So the workforce 2020, what is the next 5 years going to bring? So the results of that study are like really they electrified me. I mean, they've really been top of mind for me. And that's keeping me up at night. How can we in HR take this fantastic sort of indicator of where the world is going and proactively address it so that we can make sure we're staying competitive and really supporting the business and being part of the business? So that's what's keeping me up at night.
Well, we can't wait to hear what are the awesome news that you are about to share to our audience right now. Give us a little sneak peek to those studies about the economics and the future of workforce that is going to be in 2020. What have you learned from those studies? Would you like to share a little bit nuggets of it?
Oh, my gosh, I would love that. So a couple of key things that came out of the study that have really caught my eye. First of all, the environments that we operate in will become much more flexible in a lot of different ways. The first thing that we're noticing is that companies are going to be really dependent on non-payroll contingent workers, so consultants, contractors, et cetera, more so than ever. So today, you know, about 30% of payrolls, typically in big corporations, are really going out to non-payroll non-employees. And what's going to change is that we're going to see that bump up to about 50% by 2020. And what executives in our study said is that they've already seen 83% of them said, we already feel the difference of what our workforce looks like. It's very flexible. It's very transient in the knowledge that we're able to bring in and put on to key projects. So that's one key thing. So the actual organization will change and feel more flexible from what it's comprised of. The other thing that we're really starting to see in regards to flexible organization is the influence of technology. So the study has come out and indicated a little bit around what workers are looking for, what matters most to employees. And one thing that's fantastically interesting is that we have a whole new sort of concept of globalization. You know, it's not just the big companies moving Bob over to China for an expat assignment. Oh, no. This is about hyper-connected organization. We can tap into talent around the world at any time. And this study is really showing us that how we get work done, the way that we assemble teams, the way that we operate with or without hierarchy, that will really influence sort of our success in the future world.
Well, that is so awesome to hear, flexibility in technology. So when it comes to, you know, you talk about the global HR or global managing a global workforce, what are your tips or what are your advice that you wanted to share to our audience when it comes to managing a virtual workforce?
That's a fantastic one. And so actually, what I want to point out most with the virtual workforce, let me start with not just how to manage them, but the opportunity costs of not managing them correctly. One thing that we have noticed is that there's a learning mandate out there, meaning companies that have good learning agility, that have companies that care about learning, do much better than companies who do not have good learning, internal learning culture. So the one thing I want to point out with the globalization, the virtualization, the flexible workforce, both in the mix of non-employees and employees, but also the influence of technology, is that we could lose the ability to ensure we've got a collected sort of learning culture. So one thing I want to point out when you're managing a virtual or global workforce is how to ensure you're creating formalized interactions between peers and networks instead of leaving it to chance, which, you know, I have seen us do at times where we have connected teams, but what are we doing to help create a constructed, connected environment where we're ensuring that learning is happening during that experience, that global or virtual experience? Because today, about 80% of learning is done from peer-to-peer. It's on the job, and that's sort of the new mandate. So for managing a global workforce, my number one tip, really ensure you and HR are creating some sort of structured, formalized process to ensure it's not just a work product or work objective-focused relationship, but it's a learning relationship, that you're pairing together global and virtual teams who are learning with one another, because that's going to be a differentiator for the future.
So while we were ensuring a constructive connectedness between the, you know, workforce, what's the role of a manager when it comes to the future of workforce?
What's the role of the manager when it comes to the virtual workforce?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fantastic question.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting about leadership, what came out of the study around leadership, let me start with that. Sadly, it actually says that leaders, when we surveyed executives, it said that leaders, less than 30% of them really know how to manage a diverse workforce. That was, again, a result of our Oxford Economic research. It said that 40% of leaders really know how to manage talent, and less than 30% really know how to manage diverse talent. So I think it's very critical for HR to help prepare managers to understand what diversity means in the new world. It's not just generation. It's not just gender. It's really about, at this point in time, it's really about the values of every specific individual. It's the wishes, the desires, the interests of every single person on your team. And that may feel monumental to most managers. I'm sure it sounds not scalable. But the reality is people want to feel like people and not numbers. So in a global and virtual environment more than ever, creating those connections, helping employees feel cared about, ensuring that you're managing diverse talent in a broader sense by really understanding what makes that employee different or what makes this work group different will be very, very critical for future leadership.
Well, in fact, talking to you, I'm rumoring a quote that one of our guests shared, I think, this week. She says, that was Susan LaMutter. She said, 5 years from now, experienced leaders may be impossible to recruit, because she is predicting, like, yeah, you know, 40% of workforce are going to be millennials by 2020. So would you like to quote or respond to her quote, or what do you think throughout your studies, what type of workforce would be emerging in 2020?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Susan was spot on. I think it actually is broader than just, you know, managers or good leaders, you know, being able to find them on the open market. I actually completely agree. I think what we're going to start to find in regards to accessing talent and bringing them on board is that, you know, the war's been won, everyone says, that talent's already been, the war's been won for talent, and now we're just competing over the same folks. I think that the talent shortage is going to become very acute. I think she's completely right that when we go out and look for readily available talent, we're out there on the external market bringing them in, they're never perfect. We're not going to find anymore the people that have the five exact criteria that we're looking for. So as HR practitioners, we're going to need to really, truly streamline and think about what are the key behaviors. That's what I like to focus on. What are the behavioral attributes that I'm looking for success, particularly in my leadership roles, and do these people exhibit that? They may not have, you know, the five divestiture experience, M&A experience, whatever the pieces of experience I'm looking for, but they may have the behavioral attributes. So I think we need to change our mindset because it will be more difficult to find. And the other thing that I'd like to share is that when we did our Oxford Economic research, you know, the talent shortage obviously was something that came up. But let me tell you what was really interesting. What came out of our research was that employees are terrified of becoming obsolete. Many of them think that their skill sets will be totally obsolete within 3 years. And many of them said their companies don't have the right training that they need to feel better about that, to actually feel like they will be prepared in 3 years. So if we think about the talent shortage that Susan mentioned, not only on the external market with leaders and managers, but even internally, our employees are feeling like, I'm not going to be able to do what I need to do 3 years from now, particularly in the technology side of the house, like developers, et cetera.
Well, you kind of quoted the technology part of it in the beginning. So what do you recommend? How can we, technology and learning, how can we leverage technology and learning when it comes to, you know, fixing the skills gap among employees?
I love that question, Misha. That's a fantastic one. Here's my opinion. My opinion is that in the new world of learning, if you can just imagine this, in my opinion, the company itself becomes the classroom. I actually really believe that the workplace becomes the classroom. And so we really need to think about how to create the workplace that really facilitates learning. And I think technology is really a key enabler to ensuring that we can do that, particularly as we become more virtual, as I've shared earlier. You know, personally, I at SAP have worked from home for 2 years. You know, I'm always really connected to my peers. We're using basic technology like normal stuff, videos, et cetera. But the times are even going to change where we need to be able to think about how we can, again, facilitate virtual connection points that makes our workplace the classroom that we need it to be. It's not about sitting and training all day long, right? It's really about creating the structure to allow for learning. So technology without that, I'm not sure even how you could even begin to tackle the issue. It's literally a critical element to a learning culture.
So in order to create a learning culture, which is so happen to have a you know, holistic way with the help of all the leadership team, so I would guess that it should be part of the culture of the organization, right? So if so, what's the role of a leader when it comes to bringing everybody on the same page and making the organization a learning organization?
Yeah, I think actually learning organization starts at the bottom, to be honest. And let me tell you what I mean by that. I think if you really have an organization that is agile and embracing learning, what you will see, the indicators that you will see, are that everyone is a teacher and everyone is a learner. That means that the employee sitting next to me, maybe they send me a video on how to do a particular task I need to do at my job, or maybe I want to teach a short class on how to give a presentation to an executive board. People are teaching each other internally. There's even companies like Skillshare, for example, is a great example of where you've got just normal people coming in and sharing a skill, and people pay for that because it's valuable. And so internally, I think at companies and big corporations, we're going to see that as well. So it starts at the bottom where your employees are really engaging. They're becoming the teachers. They're on the front lines anyways. They really know how the work gets done. And then, of course, on the leadership side, definitely visible leadership is critical. If you are not an active learner, if you are not an active sharer, teacher, absorber of information, then certainly it will be difficult to signal to your organization that, hey, you should be doing this too. So on the leadership side, I'm looking for visible behaviors of being a good learner, being a good teacher, a good participant. And on the employee side, this is where the content happens. These guys are the teachers and the learners at the same time.
So let's say by 2020, we can imagine that a workforce with more of a global, more diverse employees coming from different parts of the world. So how do you sort of manage the, you know, culture when it comes to people perceive things differently? Because I can see, I hope you can relate to it, because you travel around the world. The culture that we see in the United States is not the culture that we see in China, right? So how do you kind of manage this diverse culture or diverse workforce in our company?
You know, I think that's one of the key challenges to I guess being able to harness the power of where the future of work is going. I mean, diversity, again, as I said earlier, I think it's expanding beyond just cultural differences or, you know, different genders. I mean, I think it really is expanding to be the individual worker, because the experience of the employee now, frankly, if we're not focused on the user experience, i.e. the employee experience, the manager experience, we're really missing the opportunity to excel in productivity, to excel in profitability. We're missing the ability to engage hearts and minds. So I think, again, managing a diverse culture, first of all, I think don't make assumptions. I think don't assume a culture is a certain way or a generation is a certain way. As a leader, really get to understand your particular organization. Now, if you're a leader of a 500-person organization, again, that doesn't feel scalable. But your frontline leaders do know their people. And if they don't, that's a problem, because people want to feel connected with. So I think managing a diverse organization today is really just about, again, really getting to know your workforce. I think it's not making assumptions. I'll give you a quick example with millennials. One of the things that had come out in the Oxford study, I got to tell you, and I can definitely share the link, you know, verbally here to tell you guys how to access the study. But one thing that came out was basically they myth-busted a bunch of stuff about the millennial generation that we just thought was true, right? Mm-hmm. We think millennial, and we have a stereotype in our head. What's fascinating is that a couple of things. First of all, they're mostly motivated by compensation, right? We always thought they were motivated by tell me that you love me and give me great job titles and develop me quickly. And they still care about those things, but not any more than a non-millennial would. In fact, they're as motivated by money as non-millennials, something that we really hadn't thought about before. They care about retirement plans. They literally care about retirement plans. We definitely never highlighted that in a recruiting cycle, right? We talked about free lunch on Tuesdays instead of this awesome 401k, you know, kick-in that we do. So, I mean, I think we just need to rethink how we're looking at diversity, because the stuff we thought really just isn't becoming true. Another study I recently saw, I forget why I was reading this, but female bosses, women, gender, right? We just assumed 5 years ago that women had a hard time having a voice at work, or all these terrible, you know, stereotypes and generalizations. But what actually is coming out now is that female bosses are creating higher level returns results on the productivity side of the house than male bosses. I'm not saying that that's necessarily true all the time, and frankly, that could change, you know, in a year from now. But the point is that the things that we've attached to what someone looks like or an age or what have you, they're proving to be inconsistent. So again, it really comes down to knowing the employees, because there's so much variation now into the assumptions that we made about diversity.
So currently we have these four generations, and when you take the drivers of engagement, the drivers are different. For some group, it can be a work-life balance. For some group, it is career advancement. And for some, and definitely, it is compensation. So what do you think, what matters most, or what will matter most for the future workforce by 2020?
I think so, Nisha. I think the engagement question is huge, because this is part of managing the various employees, right? But maybe this is diversity management, is managing the things that compel people to perform well at work. I think engagement is going to be the differentiator between good and great. I mean, I think they say, I forget, maybe Gallup did a study like in 2013 or something like that, but they said like only 13% of employees are engaged at work. So I always say when I do presentations, say, are the rest of the people in the world just zombies? Do we just not care? Where's everybody else on that spectrum? But you know, less than 15% of people are engaged at work. That's terrifying. So I think corporations have responsibility to figure out, when it's tied to their cultural values, what will inspire engagement in their organization. Assuming that your values are strong, your corporate, you know, sort of experience for the employees has been cemented, that they are similar, right? A lot of employees are attracted to a company because they have similar passions, values, et cetera. They believe in the same stuff at the core many times, not always. So thinking about that profile of the employees that are generally working for you in your company, what would engage them? I mean, if you're a startup and you've got 100 employees and they're all, you know, millennials, the Ruby on Rails coder, you know, people, they may be looking for a different level or program to engage them than someone in my corporation, right? SAP with 67,000 employees. So you really have to think about your particular employee base and what's going to engage them. It's going to vary throughout.
Absolutely. So I know we are talking about the future of workforce, and definitely HR must acquire some specific skills in order to manage this future of workforce, right? And nowadays, you know, the fashionable or sexy role that we have learned till now is the data scientist. That's what everybody says. HR has to acquire the skills of a data scientist in order to learn and capture insights from the big data, right? So what are some skills that you would suggest for the HR professionals to acquire in order to become successful while managing the future of workforce?
You know, I think, so first of all, yeah, data scientists, that's a very popular conversation in HR in particular. Certainly, mm-hmm. you know, we are not typically looked at as a function that's necessarily ahead of the curve. I mean, we're so busy, we can barely typically just stay above reactive, right? So data science is interesting mm-hmm. because data is giving us the power and the insight to be proactive where we couldn't before. And actually, like studies like the one we've done are exactly that sort of weapon, like secret weapon. Now we know it's coming. It's happening no matter what. It's a semi-urgent issue because whether we decide to change or not, the world around us is changing. So data scientists and data in general that really is changing the game for HR, for sure. From a practitioner's perspective, you know, I'm not a data scientist. I think many of you out there listening are probably not data scientists. I think what we can get better at in HR, the way that we can ensure that we're focusing on the future of work, is really figuring out how to mine into what's motivating the talent in our organization. We don't spend a lot of time doing that in HR. We don't really spend time assessing what are the motivators, what's compelling my workforce. We do a lot of things like creating talent reviews with PowerPoint decks and, you know, formatting them, typing stuff into Excel files. But technology can help us with that stuff now. Now we have the space and freedom to rehone our talent detectors, really ensuring that we know where talent is, how we can sort of move them around, keep them engaged, how we can inspire them. Because the workforce of the future wants to feel inspired. They do not want to come to work all day long doing routine tasks. They want to come to work all day long doing inspirational things that they're passionate about. And if we don't know our talent and we don't know the available things internally that we need to get done, we'll have a very difficult time creating the space to drive that innovative, inspirational experience that our employees are demanding now.
That's great. Well, while we were talking about the future, I mean, future of workforce, let's talk a little bit about the future of HR, because we have seen that the transition of HR from a traditional role to a strategic role, and then now we are seeing HR is business, right? So what do you think is the future of HR is going to be?
Well, I think, so HR, first of all, I'm just a mega HR nerd. I love HR, right? I think we try really hard to sit in the strategic space, but it's been so difficult. I mean, for the past 10 years, all of us have been having discussions about, you know, I want to move from this administrative space. I want to be a strategic business partner. I want to have a voice at the table. We've all been saying that, but I truly 100% believe that we are literally at the point in time where that can now become a reality. I mean, personally, as a practitioner, you know, I didn't have the technology I needed to take the burden of the administrative components of my role away. But now we do, and I honestly believe that with HR technologies that we have available to us, you know, like SuccessFactors, et cetera, we can actually start freeing up all of that time suck that we're spending on low value, very important, but you know, at the end of the day, administrative work that could be best done elsewhere or automated. That's going to allow us to become, basically open that pie up a little bit so we can fill our career more with strategic work. So I think the HR function is evolving to become more strategic. I think we've been talking about it for 10 years, and we're finally getting there. And I think what's going to be interesting is some of the practitioners are probably saying, I don't really want to do that. And I think we need to be okay with that. I think it needs to be okay to decide not to be a strategic HR partner. There are several of us that want to be strategic HR, but some do not. And so creating space for maybe even a two-tiered HR organization where there is the administrative that's valuable and we embrace them, and also the strategic, as opposed to a blanket, everyone should be a strategist, everyone should be a futurist, everyone should be able to do what I do. I think that's probably not the best way to go. But I do think HR has to be more strategic. The business is expecting it. We have our own talent supply chain to manage, just like any other part of the business.
Awesome. All right. I got to ask this debatable topic. Does HR need technology or technology needs HR?
I think HR needs technology. I honestly think, I literally can't imagine, our future success, in my opinion, hinges on excellent, flawless technology that will give our employees what I call a frustration-free environment. Do you remember when Amazon came out with frustration-free packaging? Like you just like rips the little cord and then there's your goodie, as opposed to like stabbing the package 50 times. I think technology allows a frustration-free environment for our workers. And I think that allows innovation and all wonderful good stuff to happen. So without technology, I think HR will not be able to compete. I think we have got to, I think organizations will fail who are not really embracing technology, figuring out what works for them. I think you can honestly cannot afford to be a late adopter. I think these things are happening, and a late adopter is a potential, you know, loser. Frankly, they're gonna lose in the long run.
All right, I know I'm like a baby in front of you. You are such an experienced global HR professional. And one thought that I really wanted to hear from you is, what made you successful in your HR role?
Oh, gosh, that's a surprise question. Well, you know, here's the deal. I think I've been really fortunate to work for several large enterprise companies and doing all kinds of stuff, from labor negotiations, corporate work, to program design, to be an HR analyst. I mean, I think one of the things that has been helpful for my career is just being open to new experiences in HR. I mean, anything that comes my way, I say yes. If I don't know how to do it, I still say yes. I find a mentor to help me. So I just say be brave, you know, get outside of your comfort zone. If you're a person that works in a center of excellence and you've never been an HR business partner, put that on your development plan. Go become an HR VP. Understand that the other end of the business. I really feel like if you're not uncomfortable, you're really not developing yourself. So that's really my advice to all the HR folks out there who are feeling like, you know, how do I accelerate my career? Go into the unknown. Go be great, you know, that's my advice.
Oh, awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, Bianca, thank you so much for joining with us during your lunchtime and sharing such a fantastic insights with all of our audience. So where can people connect with you, continue this conversation, and probably find out more details about your study with Oxford Economics?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Bianca E. McCann on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter at HR Lightning. And also for more information on our wonderful study, you can actually go to SuccessFactors website, so successfactors.com/2020workforce, and you'll see it, or just do a Google search and it will come right up. I hope you find the findings as interesting as I did, and please do reach out. I'd love to continue the conversation via LinkedIn and certainly any follow-up conversations that come from there.
All right. So thank you so much and have a wonderful weekend to Bianca and to everyone. So, folks, that was Bianca McCann, and follow her on Twitter at HR Lightning. Such a unique name, right? So, and find out more details. So find out more details about Oxford Economics and their study of future of workforce on Google. Right away. We will talk to you all tomorrow. Not tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye-bye.